On this episode of the Birthing in Finland podcast, my guest is Georg Machrai, a paleontologist working in the delivery ward here in Naisten Klinika. Georg has written his PhD on the topic of breech presentation and is one of the experts in this field in Finland. In today's episode, Georg explains the different breech positions that exist and their implications for the birth, as well as how the position is discovered in the first place. We spoke about what makes vaginal breech birth different from cephalic birth, and what are some criteria that the hospital follows when advising for vaginal versus cesarean birth for a breech baby. We then also spoke a bit about twin births to understand how that birth experience could be different, and what are some important things to know regarding the positions of the babies in case there are twins. Thank you for being here to listen to this episode. And just before we get started, I want to invite you to our monthly Positive Birth Helsinki meetup, which will take place on Saturday, the 15th of April, 2023. So if you're listening to this episode in real time as it airs, you can use the link in the show notes to sign up and join us. The topic of this month is my birth room, where we'll explore together in an intimate group setting what you can expect to find in a birth room in the Finnish hospitals, as well as perhaps the kind of environment that you might want to encourage to support the physiology of your birth. So don't forget to sign up, and I'm looking forward to having you there. Let's get started on this week's episode with my guest, Georg Machrai. Welcome to the Birthing in Finland podcast, brought to you by the Nest Doulas. I'm Danielle Bensky, a mother and postpartum doula specializing in maternal well-being and psychology. Each episode, you'll hear eye-opening interviews with some amazing people who support families in Finland just like yours. We'll help you navigate what it means to birth in Finland, growing your confidence on your parenting journey. Thank you for spending time with me today. Now let's jump into our daily dose of birthing in Finland. Just before this episode starts, I want to offer something really exciting. If you're listening to this and you're pregnant, then this one is especially for you. Maybe you've been busy thinking about your birth plan, and what about a postpartum plan? Well, I have just the thing for you. Prepped for Postpartum ebook, a guide for expecting parents on how to thrive in the postpartum. A comprehensive and practical 5-chapter guide covering the most important and helpful things I give my one-on-one clients. In every chapter, you will have the opportunity to take my knowledge and apply it specifically to you and your family using interactive questions and invitations for action. With easy-to-use checklists, I have made sure you will not miss any important action point needed to put theory into action and turn your postpartum into a positive and empowering experience. You can now visit motherstransition.com to get your very own copy and use the code PODCAST15 at checkout to receive a 15% discount. And now, let's get back to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to the Birthing in Finland podcast. Today on the show, we are going to be talking about the topic of breech birth and twin births together with George. Is that how you are pronouncing your name, or should it be?
No, George is okay.
Please correct me.
In German, it would be Georg, but it's okay.
Georg. Yeah. Wonderful. And with that, hello and welcome to our show. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. Before we go into that topic, let us have you introduce yourself a little bit more. Where do you work? What do you do? What's your specialization so that people know who they are listening to?
Yes, great. Yeah, hello to everybody. So my name is Georg Machrai. I am a perinatologist and I'm working majorly in the mother polyclinics, the fetal medicine department and the delivery ward in the women's hospital in Helsinki. I have done my PhD in breech presentation research in 2018, which makes me a little bit into an expert in this area here in Finland.
Yeah, yeah. Is that something quite unique, would you say?
The breach presentation, PhD, yes, I think so. I think we have actually two in Finland, people who have done a PhD regarding to breach presentation. So I think, and worldwide, there are most likely not many PhDs regarding this topic anymore, as it's not so sexy.
We'll talk about that. Okay, well, good to have you. Thank you so much. It's I love getting professionals who are specialized in something very specific. I find that to be the best episodes, when we can go in deeper on some specific issues. So again, thank you. So let's start with the breach. We also will talk a little bit about twin births later, but let's first start on the breach babies. So what are we even speaking about when we say breach, and are there different kinds of breach? Could you explain this topic a little bit before we go further?
If we talk about breech presentation, this means that the baby is presenting with the buttocks first into the delivery canal instead of the fetal head. So this means that the baby will be delivered with the butt or the feet first and not with the head. We can differentiate majorly between three different kinds of breech presentation. We have the frank breech presentation, the complete breech presentation, and the incomplete breech presentation. The frank breech presentation is the most common case, and this occurs in about 50 to 70% of all deliveries. In this form, the fetus head is flexed, and then also the hips are flexed and the knees are extended. So this means a little bit like a pocket knife. The baby is in a kind of a pocket knife position. And then we have the incomplete breech presentation. In this, the fetus hips are flexed and the knees are also flexed. So the buttocks and the feet are next to each other. Mm-hmm. This indicates this incidence rate of this presentation is about 5 to 10%. And this is a more rarer form than the frank breech presentation. And at least we have the incomplete breech presentation, which occurs in about 10 to 30% of the cases. In this form, at least one fetal hip is extended. And this includes also footling presentation and knee presentation. And this presentation is not supposed to be delivered vaginally. An incomplete breech presentation occurs rarely at term, and it's therefore rarely an indication for a planned elective cesarean section at term.
Yeah. Okay. So there are those then two cases where a vaginal birth can continue, and then one case where it's maybe more advisable for a cesarean birth to occur instead.
Yes, and this was actually we decide this presentations about the flexation of the hips and the knees. So majorly, if the hips are flexed, then the delivery can occur vaginally, and if the one hip or one foot, if one hip is not flexed, then we prefer to do a cesarean section, because then we have a higher risk of umbilical cord prolapse and things like this. So this is the reason why we then suggest more cesarean section. And also, if you have like a footling presentation where both hips would be extended, then you have the risk that for example, the cervix will not become dilated fully, and then the fetus feet and butt and tummy might be delivered, but the head might be trapped into a not fully dilated cervix. So this is also one of the reasons why we not do normally a vaginal delivery in an incomplete breech presentation.
And how do we find out the presentation of the baby? Is that done?
This is done by ultrasound. So this is done by ultrasound. And you see it, the incomplete breech presentation, as I was saying, is really rare at term, because it's normally the fetus has not the space inside the womb to extend the legs downwards. So if the fetus is still small, like 20 centimeters from butt to head, then there's still the possibility to extend the legs. But normally this is really rarely. Sometimes we have an complete breech presentation in which the feet are next to the buttocks, and then the fetus might straighten the one leg or both legs during the delivery and becomes then from an incomplete breech presentation. But this is also rarely happening.
Yeah. And is this ultrasound done sort of on the weeks prior to?
Yeah, normally
we do. Is it a routine ultrasound?
It's a routine ultrasound. So the process is normally that then when the nevola will notice that the fetus is in breech presentation, they will do a referral to us. And normally the patient gets an appointment at the mother polyclinic in week 36, sometimes 37. And if the nevola finds out that the fetus is in breech presentation later, then later. So this is when they see that close to term, the babies is still in breech presentation, then they will do a referral and then we will access the fetus, decide what kind of presentation it is and if the baby's head is flexed and stuff like this.
Yeah.
Or neck, not the head.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that kind of maybe touches on the next question I wanted to ask. So that when labor is starting, if it does start spontaneously, is it common for women to already know that the baby is in breech position, or can it sometimes be somewhat of a surprise?
Yeah, in Finland, normally it should be known. And nowadays, quite many nevolas have also ultrasound machines, and they're quite good in accessing these pregnancies in which the fetus is still in breech presentation. So normally it's not supposed to be a surprise, but sometimes it might happen as a surprise as well, especially in women who have had many deliveries before, and the tummy wall is not as firm as before, and the womb might be also bigger, so the fetus might have still possibilities to turn around close to delivery as well, for example. And then it might be a surprise.
Is it something that is also checked, you know, if a mom comes in with a breech baby, for example, if it's known in advance, do you do check again just before the, if it's a scheduled cesarean, do you check again if it is still in breech, or is?
Yes, this is actually a good question, because if it's a planned cesarean, a scheduled cesarean, we always check in the morning that the fetus is still in breech presentation, because this is the only indication in most of the cases for the cesarean section. And then we would cancel also the cesarean section and not perform it. And sometimes it's really the last moment when the fetus are turning themselves. So I have had one case when I was still an assistant doctor and doing the scheduled cesareans. I was on the ward and checked myself that the baby is in breech presentation, and it was, and then on the way down, this was like five minutes before the patient was shifted to the to the operation theater, and on the way to the theater, the fetus decided to change the position, and then when I performed the C-section, I was surprised that I have a fetus in a cephalic presentation. So this might happen even in the last moment. Sometimes the contractions are the force which are making the babies to turn around, even so if they have decided not to turn before, or if they were not willing to turn in the external cephalic version.
Well, I suppose that is sort of less of a harsh surprise than the other way around, you know, when when you're planning for a vaginal birth and then you see that the baby is in breech when you didn't expect it to be in breech.
Yeah, this is both are uncommon, but this is that the baby is surprisingly in breech presentation is maybe slightly more common than the other way that you're having a C-section and that the baby has turned around.
Tell us more on what makes a vaginal breech birth a little bit different from a cephalic, which is basically head down vaginal birth.
So for the vaginal birth, the biggest differences are that you cannot do a vacuum extraction. So this is one. So if the baby is in some kind of stress or distress, during the expulsion phase, and you have difficulties to help, and this is what it makes more stressful for the doctor, maybe. And then the other difference is that through the fact that the baby's butt becomes delivered first, also the umbilical cord becomes delivered first. So when the umbilical cord gets a little bit trapped between the maternal pelvic wall and the abdominal wall of the tummy from the baby, so it gets slightly compressed. And this is one of the reasons why during breech delivery, the expulsion phase shouldn't be too long. And this is also why we are expecting the baby to have more stress during the pushing and expulsion phase. And this is why we want to have everything before extra normally normal, so that everything has to be perfect until then, that the baby hasn't had a lot of stress, so that it has a lot of resources for the last 10-15 minutes of the delivery when the delivery stress is the highest for the baby.
Yeah.
And then the what's also different from a normal delivery in Finland. In Finland, you normally have one midwife, and then during the last moments of the delivery, a second midwife in the delivery room. But if you have a breech presentation delivery, then you have like two doctors and two midwives at the same time in the delivery room. That you have a lot of more people around. Mm-hmm. And if you ask women who have had both, for example, cephalic presentation delivery and the breech presentation, quite often they say that the breech presentation delivery was much more easier because the doctor's helping the biggest part of the baby out. So when the head comes last, so this, at least from the experience, what the women told me, that they were saying that the delivery itself feels much more easier.
Interesting. Okay.
And when I was saying before, like we don't have can do vacuum extraction, we can in the end, if there's some problem with delivery of the head, then we can help again, then we can perform a forceps delivery, which is in breech presentation quite not common, but it's not a danger actually. So you cannot do a lot of harm. So this is a easy procedure compared to, for example, forceps procedures in cephalic presentation, which we not perform anymore in Finland nowadays.
Yeah. Is there anything else from the mother's or the birthing person's perspective which would be different between the cephalic vaginal and breech vaginal?
So, yeah, the differences are the mother must be really highly motivated or must be motivated to have a cephalic a breech delivery. So we don't force anybody to deliver a breech baby, and then we have certain criteria which the baby has to fulfill and the mother has to fulfill. But for example, from the mother's perspective, we will take normally an MRI of the pelvis, which is supposed to be perfect, which is for breech deliveries. These are numbers which are chosen, which indicates that there shouldn't be any problem in the delivery channel. But I think normally the pelvic MRI is only showing, only reducing the doctor's fear of delivery. So this is normally, it's good to take them. We decrease a little bit the cesarean rate during active labor through this pelvic measurement, because otherwise the baby would not come down through the delivery channel normally, and then we would have a prolonged delivery and should do cesarean section due to this. So the MRI is for this a good thing. But otherwise, the delivery itself, it's quite the same. You can do an induction of labor. It's not forbidden, and the womb actually doesn't know if the baby is in breech presentation or cephalic presentation. So everything else will be the same. Contractions will be the same. The mother can have an epidural if she would like to have. Actually, we quite often recommend to take an epidural during breech delivery. Nothing special about this. It's only like the last moment of the delivery when you have a lot of stuff around you, yeah. And we have a higher rate of intrapartum cesarean section rates because we want to make this a safe delivery. So if everything, if it's a little bit is abnormal from the delivery, so if the cervix is not dilatating normally or the baby is not getting down in a fast way, so through the birth channel or something in the CTG is abnormal, we will do quite fast in a cesarean section. So we will convert the delivery to a cesarean section, which doesn't mean that this would be then an emergency cesarean section. It's still like we will do this in 30 to 60 minutes, and if the baby is not in the distress and the father is still allowed to come with the mother to the operation theater and everything. So it's only to make it safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I ask a follow-up question about the epidural with the breech? What was the reason that behind this one that you mentioned?
I think it's only about the resources. So you can deliver the baby as well without epidural. So in Finland nowadays, in the big hospitals, nearly every patient has an epidural. So we have like rates above 90% or something. So, but you always can try without epidural, but you should be ready to change your own plans, not to be too strict with yourself. If you see that the pain is not durable or something, then you should just change and switch and say, okay, I've tried and now I will take the epidural.
Mm-hmm. But is there something special with the breech? I mean,
no, yeah, actually, I think it's only about the resources again, like that the mother has enough strength at during the expulsion phase. But on the other hand, earlier they were saying like you shouldn't take an epidural during breech. But I think it's just the same. It's the same like with a normal delivery. You can choose it or not, but be open always for changes.
Yeah, be open for changes while informing yourself and having all the necessary resources that you need in place, of course.
Yes.
Well, what else is important for people and women to know if their baby is in breech position after the week 35, like when they're coming in to give birth? And also, what are the statistics on that? I think you mentioned maybe a little bit, but...
Yes, I can, and I can go a little bit more into detail. So breech presentation in general is a rare occurrence, and most fetuses I actually prefer to be in vertex presentation at birth because the womb space is best used if the fetus flips around at the end of the pregnancy into a cephalic presentation, because then the head can go into the pelvis and takes less space in the abdominal cavity. So this means in generally, like if you go back into week under 28 or something, still 20 to 25% or even sometimes 30% of the fetuses are in breech presentation still. And then it decreases like with every week more, like in week 32 you still have 7 to 16% in breech presentation, and then from term you have only 4 to 2%. And I think in Finland actually we have at really term, so from week 37 to 42 we have like 2.4% in breech presentation. So it's decreasing all the time because if it's getting too uncomfortable for the fetus to be in breech presentation, and then for getting the best out of the apartment in which the fetus is in the moment, so it flips around because the head fits best into the pelvis.
Yeah.
So, but it's a rare occasion. But sometimes it occurs in about 2 to 4%, and normally the nervula is quite good in picking these patients up, and then they would send them to us, and then we will do an excess of the situation, and then we offer the mothers an external cephalic version. So actually this would happen on the same slot when they come in week 36 to the mother polyclinics, and we will take a CTG, and if the mother is willing to have an external cephalic version, we are trying to flip the baby around.
Is there something that we can do in the pregnancy to encourage women to encourage the baby to be in the cephalic presentation? I mean, I know a little bit about posture and spinning babies and all of that, and we have an episode about that as well with on this podcast. But was there anything else that you know of that would be?
Yeah, it's actually most likely the same stuff which you have on the spinning course. So there's a certain kind of presentations, like you can do some yoga and try with this to help the baby to flip around, to make the, then there's as well, it's known that some kind of acupuncture might help. And then when we were discussing earlier, there might be even some chiropractic maneuvers which might help as well, a little bit about flipping the babies over. I think everything, like in this kind of way, it's as long as it doesn't harm, why not? So if this helps, then this is good. And I have seen, when I started as an assistant doctor, I started in Tamisari, Ekenes nowadays, and they were doing a lot of acupuncture over there and homeopathy, and the babies flipped. So so it's worth a try.
Has there been an increase rate of breech over the years? Like in the last, since we've become a more modern society that sits in our chairs all day and lounges on in the sofa and in the car seat, you know, because we don't, as women, and we used to be much more squatting, much more bending forward, much more, you know, if you look back at our history as humans, and nowadays we are so much more tilting our pelvis back. So like, as I said, in the sofa or in the car seat, and that creates more space for the baby on the backside rather than in the front side. So they have a tendency to go more, or how would you say that is connected?
No, I don't think that we have actually found an increase of breech presentation at term. So they are in generally like we have three reasons why the baby is in breech presentation at term. So we still have an outstanding of the fetal rotation into vertex position. So then we have an impediment of the fetal rotation. So this would mean that the baby is prohibit from turning around. So maybe there's a fibromyoma in the uterus, or you have like a abnormal shape of the uterus wall. There might be like a wall separation at the top of the uterus, or you have still, or you have even one side of the uterus or something. And then the third one is abnormal fetal movements. So sometimes the babies are not able to move normal. So this might be if they have some congenital anomalies or something in this direction, this might be also the reason. So we have these three reasons, which are the etiology of the breech presentation, actually, in general. And I think the sitting and stuff like this is not one of this. It's more like if you have an anatomic abnormality of the uterus through some fibromyoma or the own uterus developing.
Okay. You would say that has a bigger,
yes, a bigger impact. Yes, definitely.
Okay. It is, though, very important to
yes.
keep the good posture, and I mean, it can't hurt. It's helpful.
Yes, and this is good for the whole life, and most likely will help you as well during delivery if you're fit with the stuff.
Good. I think we talked about this question a little bit, but again, connecting the topic of breech presentation and cesarean birth, that it doesn't necessarily mean cesarean. And you mentioned the presentations which may indicate a need for a cesarean or a recommendation for a cesarean. Do you want to add anything else about this
Yes. So we have certain criteria which the patient has to fit, and the patient and the baby, so we have two patients, to fit that the patient is eligible for a breech delivery. So the first and most important criteria is that the mother is motivated to have a vaginal delivery. So as I was saying, we nobody force for a vaginal breech delivery. It's only, always a woman's choice. And then the fetal presentation, like it must be in a frank or complete breech presentation, then the doctors prefer to have a normal pelvis, maternal pelvis, which we are confirming normally by MRI. Sometimes we deliver the women, like if it would be now a surprise delivery that we have not noticed before that it's babies in breech presentation and everything goes good, and we notice then at 5 to 10 centimeters that the baby's in breech presentations, and then we will think that we think that everything went so fine until now, and we will just will see if the buttocks will come down normally to the introductus. So then we let the also continue the pregnancy as a delivery. But otherwise, then we will go on with the fetal weight. So the fetal is not supposed to be too big. So we prefer fetuses below 4 kilograms, even so that I personally think that the babies which are a little bit more bigger, they don't make the trouble. So normally they don't make the trouble. The bigger trouble is like if the fetus is too small, like if we have a growth restricted fetus or sometimes even a small for gestational age fetus, they are more in trouble. And the reason for this is that they don't have the resources for a stressful breech delivery. So the breech delivery is a little bit more stressful for the fetus than a cephalic presentation. And so therefore, if you have a baby which is starving in the uterus, it's not good for having a breech delivery. So we have found out, for example, also in my PhD, like if you have a baby which is too small or growth restricted, they don't have the capacity for having a breech delivery, and they have a higher rate of abnormal results after delivery. So this baby should be delivered by cesarean section. Then another criteria from the baby's neck has to be flexed. This means that the chin has to be on the chest. This reduces risk of entrapment of the head. Entrapment of the head we can salute with a forceps delivery, but everybody prefers to do it not. So, so it's always like good to check that the flexion of the fetal's neck is there. Then we should go to the active to the delivery. So these are the criteria which are supposed to be beforehand good. And then during the delivery itself, the baby has to go through the birth channel like smoothly. Then the cervix has to become dilated in a good manner so that the everything looks normal. Then we shouldn't have an abnormal CTG, so this electrocardiotomography. So this should be normal during the delivery. And then we should have not a prolonged active delivery stage, second delivery stage. So the pushing phase should not be more than 60 minutes, definitely. And best would be if it's less than 40 minutes. So this is important things. But this is not what the woman can herself do. So this is more about the doctor who has to see then this is a prolonged delivery. So we should turn and change the mode of delivery and go to the cesarean section.
I mean, it could be something. I mean, it's good for women, I think, to be aware of this, because, for example, if we see that the pushing is taking a long time, maybe a change of position of the birthing person is helpful, you know, instead of if you're on your back, then moving to all fours, or maybe a little shift in the pelvis will help.
Yes, this all fours delivery is actually really interesting. So, because in some countries, in Germany, in some hospitals at Frankfurt, for example, they are doing this nowadays a lot, the breech deliveries on all fours, which the advantage of this is that there's less compression to the umbilical cord during the delivery. When I was saying before that it's sometimes getting entrapped between the tummy wall and the maternal pelvis is less in all fours position. But for this actually, it would be good to have more all four positions in general. So I think this is our sometimes we don't have so many all four deliveries in general in our big hospitals nowadays. And actually, it's a good delivery position. So from the maternal perspective and from the fetal perspective, so it's would be most likely good if women would have more or four deliveries in general. And then if we have in general more or four deliveries, then also after that, I would say then we can do this as well more in breech presentation, for example.
Okay. Any other criteria, or was that all of them?
No, these were actually all criteria for breech presentation. So generally, like, you have to check beforehand that the fetus has no abnormality, is not too small, not too big, and that the mother's fitting the criteria, that their pelvis is okay, and then during the delivery, you have to just follow up that you have a perfect delivery, that everything goes smoothly and nicely, so you don't have CTG changes, and then the second delivery stage takes not too long. Then you will have a good delivery and a fine baby.
Nice. Good. I think from what I wanted to ask, that was kind of everything for the breech births. So if you don't have anything else to add, then we can then talk a little bit about the twin births.
Yes.
Yeah.
This sounds good.
Which is also something you are specializing in. So again, this question, what makes the twin birth different, or twin pregnancy and preparation for birth different than single
yes.
baby? How, what's the correct terminology for this?
Yes. Yeah. So the difference between the twin pregnancies and the singleton pregnancies. So unfortunately, there are more complications through all the whole pregnancy and twin pregnancies. So you have a higher rate of miscarriage, you have a higher rate of congenital anomalies, and you have a higher rate of premature deliveries. So this is unfortunately the case with the twin pregnancies. So luckily nowadays in Finland, at least, we have less and less twin deliveries, which are done by our colleagues from the IVF department. So nowadays we have only single fetus transfers. So this is a good thing. Through this, we have seen a decrease again of twin deliveries, which is good. So and in general, the twin delivery, the biggest difference there again, you have two. So you have during the delivery time of fetus A, you have to be aware that fetus B is getting as well already some stress. So and this is what you have to monitor carefully, and the monitoring, or the most dangerous moment for fetus B, which is the second one supposed to be delivered, is in the moment when fetus A is already delivered. So in the moment from in this time, it's sometimes quite difficult to follow up the fetal heart rate good. And nowadays we have always an ultrasound machine as well in the delivery room and check the heart rate as well with the ultrasound machine and not only with the CTG, because the CTG is only a machine, and the machine takes always, like during the delivery from twins, it takes the strongest heartbeat and the second strongest heartbeat. And then sometimes, for example, in the moment when baby A is delivered, then the second strongest heartbeat is the heartbeat from the mother. And if you don't remember to switch the machine to other mode, then you might be following up the heart rate of the mother, and the heart rate of the mother during a delivery might be also 120 or 140. So you might following up the heart rate of the mother and have a pathologic heart rate of the fetus, which you're not noticing. But because of this, we are taking the ultrasound machine and we will see that the baby's heartbeat is normal as well. And then it's just you have a lot of stuff again around, like you have two doctors, sometimes even more than two midwives, because of the amount of babies. So there might be 2 to 4 midwives, and then when baby A is delivered, so we most of the time, sometimes the baby can go direct to the mother. If the baby B, there's normally a time gap between the delivery A and B, delivery of baby B, so might be taking 30 minutes, or earlier it was also sometimes 1 hour, but 30 minutes is nowadays mostly the normal. Then we make an intervention, break the water or something. And then when the delivery of baby B starts, and then the baby goes to the father to have the skin contact, and then we will continue with the second delivery. So it's double stress for the mother, but I think it's as long as the fetus are in good position, presentation. So this means in twin delivery that we prefer that fetus A is in a cephalic presentation, and fetus B can be in whatever presentation it wants to be. So even transverse position is not a problem, because then you can direct the baby after delivery of baby A in a normal presentation. And it's also no problem if baby B is in a breech presentation. I personally, for example, prefer it, even because in a case of emergency, you could grab the ankle of the baby and pull it out, because it's much easier to grab the ankle compared to a vacuum extraction of fetus B, which is also possible, but it's easier to grab the ankle. And then the only presentation which we don't like is like if fetus A is in breech and fetus B is in a cephalic presentation. So even if both are in breech presentation, then it's also okay to deliver them vaginally. But the presentation when fetus A is in a breech and fetus B is in a cephalic presentation, this has a slight risk of that their genes are hooking up each other, so that they entrap themselves. So this is a reason why we don't want them normally as delivered vaginally. We do this if the woman or if a woman wants this, then we do this as well, but it's not our recommendation. So normally we try to talk the patient out of this, but if a patient insists on it, then we wouldn't say you cannot come to us, because we don't want any home deliveries with these cases. So everybody can always come to us, also if the babies are in breech cephalic presentation. So this is not a problem, because we have had one case in the past where this went wrong when the mother decided to do then a home delivery.
Yeah. In this specific case of the
twins, specific case,
twins
yes,
being
yes.
In this position.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good message to give to women in general. Like, your voice matters.
Yes,
we are here to listen to your voice. At the same time, we have recommendations and protocols, which are also important to know about. And then using each person's own judgment, they can decide what is best for them.
Yes, yes. And it's always important as well, like, to be open-minded for changes in the plan. So this is normally, doctors and midwives only want to have healthy patients, healthy babies and healthy patients. And then it's not about doing any harm to anybody or something. Mm. It's always like we're trying to get mother and baby healthy home.
Yeah. Would you say also how much of this is like evidence-based, as well as being in a PhD, coming from PhD, and I suppose looking a lot about research? Are you confident in saying that this is all kind of evidence-based, or would you say that more research needs to still be done on these things? Or
I think with the breech presentation, through that we have had now, actually I was in the beginning, I was wrong. So I know 3 PhDs from Finland, which are done for breech presentation. So we have done some research, and this has the good thing about us doing research and getting this back into the mind of the people is that it's became also more normal again to have breach presentation deliveries. So we have had, after the breach term trial, which was an awful example of bad done research, we have had a decrease worldwide from breach deliveries. And the term breach trial, for example, they included patients which were not eligible for a breach delivery. So this was one of the major reasons why they have had so bad results. And we have shown through our own research and that if you have certain criteria for breach delivery, then it's a safe option. And then you just have to follow up the criteria. So you just have to make sure that the patient and the fetus is fitting the criteria, and then you during the delivery phase also stick to the criteria, that the second stage shouldn't go too long or stuff like this. And then you will have a safe delivery.
And these are the criteria you mentioned.
Yes, already. Yes. Yeah, yes, these are the criteria which I mentioned. Yeah. And I think also the guidelines through the world, they are changing more and more. For example, I have personally reviewed the Canadian guidelines for breach delivery, which are really good now also. And they have done a lot of work as well. And it's also nice to collaborate with other researchers worldwide to talk about breach deliveries and to get ideas from other people. For example, when I started, I got actually interested in breach deliveries when I became a specialist, and I was discussing with my junior about the schedule of the cesarean sections and asking what kind of deliveries we have, and then the assistant doctor told me, yeah, one of them is a breech presentation, and I was saying, oh, it's again patient who doesn't want to have a vaginal delivery. No, this is different. So this person would like to have a delivery, but it's not starting spontaneously, and this they were already, the patient was overdue like 41 plus 5, and then we started to I went to the theater and talked with the patient and asked her if she would mind if I do a vaginal examination, and then I noticed that the cervix was a little dilated like three centimeters, and then I offered her we can do as well an induction of labor, and this was uncommon in 2010 in Finland. So we didn't do an induction of labor, and then we did research on it. And nowadays, after we have done this research, so many other countries have done as well quite similar research. And nowadays, induction of labor and breech presentation is okay. So we have found out that it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the research has had an impact. That's and also worldwide. So, and the criteria also, or the guidelines have changed. So when mm-hmm. I was talking about the Canadian guideline and so, and other guidelines, it's nowadays, it's okay to do an induction of labor easy if the baby's in breech presentation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So research is always good and necessary, but in the moment we are quite well with research and breech presentation, but if somebody gets a new idea to make it better, it's always welcome.
that's a good one. Please, more the merrier.
Yeah.
We have funding.
Yes.
How is the twin pregnancy, or when does the twin pregnancy move to a cesarean birth?
Yeah,
actually, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and about the twin pregnancy. Actually, what is also different is the schedule of the end of the pregnancy. So we have to, in twin pregnancies, we make a big difference between the placentation. So if we have the twin pregnancies, which fetuses which are sharing one placenta, and twin pregnancies in which both fetuses have their own placenta.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones which are sharing, they are unfortunately a little bit more in danger and trouble. So they have also during the pregnancy some more complication risks. So they can have a blood shift from one fetus to the other. This is called TTTS, and there's a transfusion syndrome. And then there's another symptom, which is TEPS. This is also a shifting of blood cells from one fetus to the other, which can occur if they're sharing one placenta, but for this we can treat with a laser fetoscopic treatment. But then in the end of the pregnancy, so these twins who have sharing one placenta, they should be delivered already in week 36 to 37. And then the other twins, everybody has their own placenta, they should be delivered in week 38 already as well, 38 to 39. So this is the special thing about the delivery schedule of them. And then we normally perform an induction of labor with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what was
what are the risks of waiting to week 40 with twin pregnancy?
This is unfortunately because the blood perfusion is not so good anymore. So you have a high risk of fetus mortis. So you have a high risk of stillbirth. If you continue with waiting and not doing an induction. So in Finland, it's not as high as in many other countries, but if you go to the US or UK, they have a really high rate of stillbirth if they continue to wait.
Okay.
So this was why on worldwide we agreed that in week 36 to 37, this monoiotic, diamniotic twins should be delivered, and the ones with two placentas, that they should be delivered in week 38 to 39.
Mm-hmm. I think I was also going to ask when does the twin pregnancy move into a cesarean birth? Like, when does that become necessary? Are there also criteria or guidelines around this?
Yeah, it's not so strict like in breech presentation. So it's like the normal performance of the, like if the cervix is not dilatating normal, or if you have a prolonged first delivery stage, it's the same actually as a breech presentation or in every normal delivery, then you would go for a C-section. And then the other one for the risk is like if you have a problem with bleeding or fetus CTG abnormalities, because if you have already in the beginning of the delivery problems with the CTG of B fetus and you know he will be the second one who was delivered, you cannot take a blood sample from the baby to make sure that the baby is okay. So mm-hmm. So if you have normal cephalic presentation, we take blood samples sometimes to make sure that the baby has no acidose. And so this is also one criteria. So sometimes I got asked about the breech babies, and colleagues asked me why you don't take blood samples from the butt. And I was saying, this is technically no problem, but if the CTG is not so bad that you have to take blood samples, this is an indication for a cesarean section. So you shouldn't continue then.
Mm-hmm.
And ensure, because you cannot help during the expulsion phase.
Yeah. So in quite a few cases, then you could have a spontaneous or a vaginal birth with an induction of a twin pregnancy, but always kind of watching and seeing how things are developing to see if there is a need to intervene in the middle with the cesarean.
Yeah, I think with twin deliveries, I think most of the pregnant deliveries which we start, they actually went fine. So they have really, I don't know the numbers, but the success rate of delivery, vaginal delivery, is really high. So I think in twin pregnancies, we have like, my gut feeling would say like 80% of the deliveries are vaginally at least.
Mm-hmm.
And from the beginning, from the beginning and during the delivery itself, I think most of them are really delivered vaginally, so we don't have really big problem with them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, is there anything else you wanted to add, either on the breech or the twin, before we finish? I think that was, from my side, that kind of covered everything.
Yeah, only thing is like patients should ask and tell their own wishes. so and discuss and not and then they should be also be ready to change their own decisions. Like it's good to have own wishes and everything. Sometimes if the patients come to the delivery ward and they have a long list of own wishes, this is all good, but it's not all wishes are always will be fulfilled. So it's good to have wishes, but also it's too good to be ready that not everything goes as planned. So it's always open-minded for changes, and everybody should remember, like, the staff always want to have healthy women and healthy children. So this is my advice. But yeah, so I think vaginal breech deliveries are great, and as long as mother and baby is fitting to the criteria, so this is a really good option. And with twin deliveries also, so there's no good reason for doing a cesarean section as long as they're fitting the criteria. And also, for example, cesarean sections have their own risks, especially if you want more than one child, then you always have to remember, like, the for the first child, the cesarean section might be the safer option, but for the second one, they're already through the first cesarean section, also risk during the pregnancy.
Yeah, that's a really good point to mention as well. Like, we see it as something that, I mean, in many cases, it can save lives or be the way out, but it does come with risks, and it is major surgery. So thank you for mentioning that as well, just to finish us off.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey, thank you for listening to this episode, and welcome back next week. Just before you go, I want to ask you a question. Do you want postpartum support from people around you but struggle with asking for help? Do you feel awkward to have this kind of conversation? Are you not really sure what to say? I've got you covered, and I've created just the guide for you. It's a word-for-word script that will help you feel confident to have this hard conversation. You will also receive the three crucial elements for a request for help, which will turn it from a nice idea into a reality. Until now, this script has been used only by my clients, and this will be the first time that it is offered for free. It's your chance to receive a great tool which has guided many of my clients in overcoming their fear of asking for help and allowed them to build their village. Do you want the guide that will help you build yours? You can download it now by visiting motherstransition.com. Thank you for tuning in to the Birthing in Finland podcast. To get the show notes for this episode, go to doulacollective.fi/birthing in Finland. If you enjoyed the episode, go ahead and share this with someone who you think needs to hear it. A friend, a colleague, a neighbor. Help us get the word out so that more families can start enjoying these conversations. See you next time when I introduce you to another amazing person supporting families just like yours. Thank you.